It is an absolute pleasure for me to introduce our next speaker, Tom Johnson. Tom is a founder of Johnson Consulting. He's pretty famous for a lot of things that he's accomplished in his life, the most recent of which would have been Prime Succession. So let's welcome Tom.
Thanks, Ernie. Well, it's good to know that Ernie Heppner got out of bed to come see me this morning, didn't it? Listen, I've been charged with the task of bringing you up to date a little bit on acquisition and merger activity in the United States. Hi, Jim. And it's a pretty daunting task, the buying and selling of funeral homes. So I had to bring in my own expert into this deal. And here he is. Anybody know who this guy is? I'm seeing so many friends out here now that I've got the studio in and out. Who is that? John Thomas is gone now. That's W.C. Fields. Everybody remember W.C. Fields? Probably one of the, just a great comedian back in the 30s and 40s. But what can W.C. Fields tell us about buying and selling funeral homes in the United States of America? Anybody want to take a guess? Well, there was a movie he was in called The Gambler. And in that movie, W.C. Fields was sitting at a table playing poker when a man walked into the room and stepped up to the table. And I tend to think this guy may have been a funeral director or a cemetery, and I'm not sure. But anyhow, he stood up at the table and said, "Gentlemen, is this a game of chance?" And W.C. Fields looked up at him and said, "Son, not the way I play it, it isn't." And that's lesson number one of what we're going to talk about today. The environment's really changed in the acquisition business, for sure. And it can't be a game of chance. It's got to be a sure thing. You probably, if you're thinking of selling your place someday in the future, and everybody usually does once in their life, at least a transfer of ownership to family, you don't want to take a chance when you do that. It's got to be a sure thing. So what we're going to do today is put our cards on a table in this business today. And we're going to talk about things like, who are the buyers out there today? And how it's changed over the years. How much you can expect to get for your business or pay for a business, and what determines value? What determines value? Let's talk about the 90s versus today. Everybody remember the 90s? I'm looking out there, and a lot of you were in the 90s when it was going on. I call it the raw meat syndrome of acquisitions. If you took a piece of raw meat and threw it in a pen of wolves, it would be very similar to what was going on back in those days. There wasn't a funeral home that couldn't be bought. Everybody was fighting over everything. And it's very true. But that's changed, and because it's changed, it's very important that you don't take a chance. You got to know who you're dealing with. And that's where we think Johnson Consulting comes into play. Let's talk about Johnson Consulting. Ernie was nice enough to call me an icon. I'm no icon. I just happen to be around for a long time, and I've made a lot of mistakes. I've done some good things. But when I retired from Prime Succession, basically, I got bored of being out of the business and got into assisting some friends in merger and acquisition activity. And I thought it would be something I would do once a month or whatever. That didn't turn out to be that way. It got to be a popular alternative pretty quick. And to do so, because of that, we had to build a team. And I want to talk about my team. I'll take 5 minutes. Everybody seems to know this guy more than they know me. I don't understand. But that's my son, Jake. Don't let his name confuse you or whatever. Just because he's a Johnson doesn't mean he was given that position. Jake was a financial background in college. He became a financial analyst for Prime Succession, was his first entree into the business. He then went on to be associate director of corporate development for the Keystone Group when Keystone was just starting their acquisition program, very involved in the acquisition activity at Keystone. After Keystone, when Keystone stopped buying, basically, or when it really slowed down, Jake moved on. It came out to Palm Mortuaries and Cemeteries here in Las Vegas, Nevada. Scared the hell out of me. I thought he was going to throw away everything he had earned in those first few years. But he didn't. He became a manager of one of Ken's largest funeral homes out on Jones Street. He handled 800 families a year. After that, okay, thank you. Ken put him as vice president of cemetery operations. He ran all the cemetery operations for Palm. So you take that financial background he had at the beginning and combine it with the hands-on experience of funeral home and cemetery business. Jake's become a very valuable commodity to this company. He is now, we just named him the president of the company, by the way. This is a guy we all know, Dave Heard. Whatever happened to Dave Heard? Well, Dave Heard's kind of semi-retired, but he's doing a lot of work for us. And Dave was ex-president of Batesville Casket Company. He led Batesville in his 13 years as president to the highest growth and profitability years. He's a consummate businessman. Anybody know David? I mean, a lot of people should know Dave. I mean, he's a great guy and a good businessman. He brings a real business acumen to our company. Dale Espeak is hand consulted with over 500 funeral service operations in the United States. And he's written many articles about funeral profitability. And he's got his profitability model that he works on. Dale's just a great guy, joined our company about a year ago, and he's doing a great job for us. Bill Cutter. I don't know how many of you know Bill Cutter, but Bill and I started in the business at the same time back, oh, God, I don't want to tell you when, for Batesville Casket Company. And Bill went on to work for SCI until I could convince him to come over and run the corporate development of Pierce Brothers. After Pierce Brothers was sold, we didn't want it to be sold, but it was, Bill joined me at Prime Succession, was head of corporate development at Prime Succession. Bill's been around the block when it comes to doing deals, buys and sells. He brings a lot to the party. Bob Pierce. Bob Pierce was a member of the Pierce Brothers Mortuaries and Cemeteries in Los Angeles. His family founded the company. A lot of history there. So Bob knows a lot about funeral directing, but the other thing Bob brings to the party was his years at FMAC, which was a financing company in the business back in the 80s and 90s. And through that activity, Bob becomes a very valuable body for us at Johnson Consulting. Isn't that a great picture? We're not going to talk about that guy right now. We'll get to him later. So I'm just going to go. But we've assembled a pretty good group of guys. It's not one person running a consulting group. It's a group of professionals that are here to help you in buying and selling of funeral homes. And the other piece of negotiating the deal. I mean, you guys got a lot of things to do. Negotiating deals is not an easy thing to do. We do it every day. So we know what we're doing. So the environment's changed. Let's talk about how the environment has changed a little bit. Remember this ad, Randy? This is a Stewart ad promoting acquisition back in the late 80s, early 90s. Remember that company? The Loan Group? They were buying more than anybody back in those days. They've reorganized, become Alderwoods at this point in time. And there's a company called SCI, the leader in our business, largest number of funeral homes and cemeteries. And that's changed. But why has it changed? I mean, back in the 90s, it was the I saw it first syndrome. Remember that? I mean, everybody was fighting over the deal. And that's not happening right now. What's happening is those three firms, which really led the activity back in the 80s and 90s, have been missing from acquisition activity in the last few years. Now, they're starting to evolve again, which is really good for the industry. But there's reason for it, and we're going to go through that right now. The thing that changed, this is the thing that changed that, because of it, acquisitions just slowed to a halt in the late 90s, early 2000s. The financial climate. And what do I mean by that? For the public companies, there was a growth story going on back in those days. And the grain of America. Remember all the baby boomers and all this stuff. And Wall Street really bought into it. And they funded a lot of the acquisition growth for the public firms. And what happened is that the prices got so high back in that time. And they started looking at same store business and how we were managing our firms. And basically the investment world said, slow down, guys. You've had a good growth cycle. It's time to manage what you got. And once you get it under control, then we'll revisit. But that's a big change in the financial climate, because when the public companies stop buying, you know, things settle down. There's not so many willing and able buyers. What's the other thing that took place? Remember the venture firms that were in the business back in those days? Arlington, Sentinel, Paragon, Prime. We were all venture-backed. And what is venture-backed money? That's money that comes from New York, Chicago, private investment firms that say, let's gather up a management team, give them the money they need to buy as many funeral homes as they can, as quickly as they can, with the intent of going public, because the stocks were doing so doggone well back in those days. And they wanted to be part of that. Well, that was fine and dandy back then, but when the stocks went down, those boys said, well, that's it. This runs over. It's time to go to the sidelines. And they did. They're not around anymore. There's a couple, but not many. The other thing that happened, we talked about a little bit ago, and that's FMAC, Bob Pierce, the financing arm. Remember Provident Services? And there's more, the financing companies. And what made them different than banks? Anybody? A little bit on the people, but they did, and there's one other thing they did. They lent on cash flow. They lent on cash flow. And that's a big difference than your local bank. Local bank's going to look at your assets and say, well, here's what I can lend you, but it, you know, it just doesn't, they don't understand the business all that well. The last piece is, they're gone. Provident, FMAC, there are some new companies in the business, not many, but they're being very careful. It's tough to get those type of loans in the business today. The last piece of puzzle in the financial climate that changed was the local banks. Didn't change much, but when activity was high, yeah, you could go to your bank, and probably they would, because they heard everything and all the good things about funeral service, they would lend a little more than the asset base that you had. Try to do that today. I mean, it's very tough. It really is tough. So what do we do? What did we do back in those days? I love this one. I call it the abracadabra style of acquisitions. What do I mean by that? Well, when you're buying a firm, or if you're the buyer, you're the seller needs to put his financial statements together. All the financial information, all the demographic information, all of it. You put it in a nice little package. You take that historical financials, and you kind of figure out, well, here's the pro forma. Here's what this firm will probably do in the future. And so back in the 90s, that's what we'd do. We'd do our little pro forma, and boom, there was the number we could pay, at least a range. And then we'd go out and negotiate. Negotiating was pretty tough in the 80s and 90s. It was just, how much are we going to have to pay for this firm? And then once we found out how much it was going to take, please believe me, this happened. We would go back into the pro formas, add a little case count, add a little average sale, maybe drop off another person or whatever else, reduce advertising, that was always a smart one, but build it up to where our bottom line would justify the deal. Now, that's a hell of a way to do business, isn't it? But it doesn't happen that way today. Today, it's precision. And if you don't believe it, you've got to talk to some of the public firms to really understand this, all right? But there's no more of the abracadabra style of acquisitions going on. You gather all your information, more information than we ever gathered in the past. You put your performance together. You find out what your cash flow is going to be. You put your multiple on it for that size and nature of business, and that's what you can pay. And guess what? The board of directors knows that too. So when you go out and negotiate a deal, you know, that's the parameter you got to be in. And guess what? And if you can't work it out with the seller, what happens? You'll walk away. And how many walkaways were there in the 80s and 90s? Hardly any. But it's going on today. And there's an old saying that sometimes the best deals are the deals you don't make. Well, there wasn't any of that in the 80s and 90s. But there are today. There are today. So here's another thing that was going on in the 80s and 90s. You walk into your meeting rooms, your nice little conference rooms, you put a map of the United States on the wall, you pull out your shotgun, and you go boom, and there would be dots everywhere. We say, yep, that's where we're going to buy. And if you were a small firm in Kentucky, Maryland, you pick it, or a big firm anywhere, we'd all be there. We'd all be on your door. Hell, I remember going in the state of Florida one time. It was a small town. It was a nice firm, and there was only one hotel. Well, hell, I saw all my buddies at the hotel. I mean, it was just like a revolving door. Went breakfast, lunch, dinner. We saw everybody. We happened to win that deal because we were the last ones in. But I don't know if it was really a win. Today, it's the rifle approach. It's the top of the page. And to where you're going to hear this phrase a couple times in this talk, but you target in on what you want to buy. You don't just buy everywhere. It's very precise. And here's the byline of the day. It doesn't fit the profile. How about it, Randy? When you hear that a lot, and I'll give you a great example of this. There's a firm that I can't tell you where or what, but it's a fairly nice firm, 1,000 cases, several locations. Great firm, and they decided that it would maybe time to sell. So they called us up, asked to do evaluation. We did evaluation, walked into and presented, and they said, you must be kidding. This is ridiculous. So my firm's worth much more than this. Say, well, you know, times have changed a little bit. He said, well, what are you talking about? He said, I had two firms walk in here 10 years ago and tell me it was worth this million and this million. $1 million apart, probably double what our valuation was. And I said, well, times have changed, but we will check that out. I mean, we'll talk to those people first. So let's go back to this. It doesn't meet the profile. We approached these two firms. We had a great book put together, painted a great picture. and the firms didn't pay what they said they were going to pay 10 years ago. They wouldn't pay what we said the firm was worth. They wouldn't even make an offer because it didn't fit the profile. Think about that a little bit. I mean, this was shocking to that gentleman. And so, but beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And so what may not be beautiful to somebody may be beautiful to somebody else. And one thing we bring to the table is we know a lot of buyers throughout the country. We're going to get into that in a minute. But what wasn't pretty to this firm was pretty to some other people that we knew in the general area. And the firm was bought at, or it was bought above our valuation that we put together. So ultimately, the owner was happy. But it's kind of an expansion of it doesn't fit the profile. All right, here's me. Notice that dark hair? That's gone. Prime Succession. Prime Succession was a roll-up that I orchestrated as part of the venture group. And we were really trying to take this company public with the intent that we were going to be a little bit different, focusing on market share rather than revenue growth. We thought we were going for long-term revenue growth. Ultimately, it didn't work, and one of the reasons was this. Another expert. W.C. Fields, who's this person? Scarlett O'Hara. What does she have to do with what we're doing here today? Any idea? How would Scarlett O'Hara handle a difficult situation? What would she say? I'll worry about that tomorrow. And what I'm saying here is that all of us, we're all guilty back in those days. And that we were buying, God knows we were buying. We thought we were great buyers, all right? But we thought we'd worry about operations tomorrow and let that follow. And you can't do that today. Those days have changed. Wall Street has made that big change for us all. You got to focus in on what you do. So that's where I call, if you buy something today, you've got to nurture what you buy. You got to reinvest back in, which is one of the sins that happened back in those days. We didn't invest back enough in what we were doing, all right, what we were buying. We just kept on buying. And you got to reinvest back in. All right. So who are the buyers for funeral homes today? Let's talk about this. Public companies. Public companies, we've already discussed a little bit. Back in the 80s, 90s, very prominent, probably did 80 to 85% of all the transactions that were happening in the United States and the world at that time. Today, they're starting again. I mean, they've got their operations pretty much under control and starting to look again. Some are even buying again. So that's significant. Venture companies, we talked about that. When stock prices went down, the venture companies pretty much dried up. I doubt if they'll be back in. There's a few hangers-oners, but they're probably not going to be significant in the future. Private-held firms, national firms. There are private individuals that will buy on the East Coast, the West Coast, the South, and the North. And it's become fairly significant in what's going on, and we know who those buyers are. Probably the most prevalent acquirers in recent years have been these guys. Regional operators that have been around for years, solid companies, firms pretty much paid off at this point in time, and they've got an arsenal of money to buy firms driven by the profile a little bit because they'll be in their area. But they have been doing a lot of transactions the last few years. Here's one, the competitor. Yeah, I'll get back to that one in a minute. There's still the key employee transactions that are taking place, although financing is a little difficult in some cases. And you have the family transfers that have been going on for years and years and years. That's a big piece of it. But let's look at this group of seven. I just want to talk about one. We all know about most of the others. The competitor. You know, it's amazing to me, being in this business for a long time, 25 years, and being an acquisition piece of it, and oftentimes when we bring a deal or you see a deal, who's got more to gain than anybody else in a transaction? It's the competitor. Why? Because efficiencies with rolling stock and personnel, you might be able to close down a facility, whatever else. The competitor has more to gain, and you have more to gain by buying your competitor. I mean, I made a history of it in L.A. when Randy was there, Randy and I were there. I mean, that's how Pierce Brothers got back on its feet, because our competitors joined Pierce Brothers, and it became a powerful thing. Ron Morey knows about that too. He was a big piece of that puzzle. So one piece of advice, and I talked to a study group about a month ago, and the guy was talking about his darn competitor. I'm cleaning it up with how he was talking about his competitor. But, you know, mend the fences, bury the hatchet. If you're at odds with your competitor, you know, have a lunch, a breakfast, a dinner, or something. Kind of wine and dine, if you will. Become at least on speaking terms with this person. Because the day he decides to sell, that's when you want to jump in. It can be one of the best financial things that can ever happen to your company. Trust me. On the other side, it can be the best one for you, too, because he's got more to gain. There'll be more cash flow generated through that pro forma because of the efficiencies he can piece together with you. So don't rule out your competitor. Oftentimes we do, and we shouldn't. So the 90s versus today. Jake taught me how to use this little red thing, so I got to use it once. There are the big guys back in the 80s and 90s. They're doing the bulk of the deals, all right? Today, on the right side, that's not the case. That's not the case. Most of the transactions we are doing are with regional firms or with competitors, believe it or not. And they've been good deals. They've been really good deals. One of the significant things we did, my old company, Prime Succession, when it was, a lot of things happened to it after it was sold, but it came back, believe it or not, in our hands one more time to market the firms. And most of those firms were marketed to the nearest competitor in the area. And 99.9%, that can't be 99.9, but very close to that, these firms were really struggling, all right? Because no money was invested back in, it was a significant problem, and that's why they had financial problems. When we sold them to the competitor or regional operators in the area, all these firms are, I would say, they're certainly improving. Some of them are booming, literally booming. Why? Because they're investing back in the firm. And now there's this feeling, this good feeling about we're not a bankrupt company anymore. We're a company that's going somewhere. It's been really eye-opening for me. What's our job? Our job is to take all the data that we've kind of talked about, and we're going to talk about it some more, and all the buyers that are out there, and we funnel that for you. Instead of shooting arrows anywhere on a target, we bring it right in, and we become pretty precise with what we do. Why? Because you all wear a lot of hats. You cemeterians, you're businessmen, you're pre-need guys, you need to know how to mow the lawn. You need to know how to keep your streets up, this, that, and whatever. Funeral directors probably started out embalming. Maybe still doing some. Your pre-need guys, your promotional guys, your advertising guys. You wear a lot of hats. That's a good news, bad news situation. The bad news is you can't be expected to know how to sell a business. Not really. Or buy a business. You don't do it every day. The good news is we're around, and there are others like us that do deal in this every day. And you know, we've got 25 years of history personally to help you through the process. Again, how many times you do it? Not very often. So when you do it, you want to make sure you do it right. So again, the business valuation is not really your job. All right, we've talked about who will buy your firm. We kind of talked a little bit, but we'll get into it a little more. Who will pay the best price? And what's it worth in today's market? And again, the piece of the puzzle for us is that we paint that picture. If you take a typical private, where someone tries to sell the firm, they'll sell. What typically will happen, the buyers will, I want to sell my firm, they'll get the word out, and all of a sudden they'll send 3 years of financial statements in, a couple years of tax return, and say, all right, make me an offer. Well, that's really painting a great picture of what your business is all about. You know, there's a history of your business that's very, very important. There's demographic studies, there's mixed studies, there's case studies, there's market share studies, there's maps, graphs, letting people know where you are if they're national buyers. There's a lot of things that needs to take place. What our job is, again, like the arrows through the funnel, we're the ones with the paintbrushes. We paint the pictures to optimize the price as a seller and as a buyer to make sure you know what you're buying. So we say you do it right, you only do it once. All right. Here's the thing that everybody's seen the movie The Matrix, Samuel L. Jackson and Keanu Reeves, guys walking through telephone wires and telephones. Well, we got a matrix ourselves. It's called the Value Observation Matrix. And this is probably the most significant thing that we brought into this field And it's something that if you got a pen and paper in hand, you might want to take a few notes, because there's a lot of things going on out there about how much a business is worth. And we're going to tell you pretty close here, to some degree. Can't give out all the secrets. You never have to hire us. But what we look at when we value a firm. But let's dispel a few myths first, because there's myths out there everywhere when it comes to buying and selling funeral homes and cemeteries. And to do that, I'm going to go away from funeral service and cemetery service for a little bit and talk about some sayings that we just have in life in general. Anybody know what this one is? Burn the hands, work two in the bush. Now, I'm not sure what all that means, but it's a saying that goes out there. This one? It's a rock and a hard spot. Rolling stone gathers no moss. Well, I'm not sure whether it does or not, but there's an old saying that we've been hearing for years. This one? Come on, come on. It's not a test. Don't count your chickens before they're hatched, huh? Penny wise, pound foolish, kind of may even apply to our business here. How about this one? Yeah, close. What if it had a ribbon on its back there? Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. You can lead a horse to water. And finally, for my wife, I did this one. A stitch in time, saves nine. All right, that's some of the myths of the world or sayings of the world. And guess what? There's a lot of sayings going on in our business, too. And people are taking a great chance when they're handling these myths or thinking this is the way they're going to value the business. What are some of the myths in our business, especially funeral business? Well, I know what to sell my firm for. It's 2x revenues, 3x revenues. That's pretty simple, isn't it? Well, it's hogwash. If you do it, you're going to leave hundreds of thousands on the table, overpay hundreds of thousands of dollars. It doesn't work. It may work in a very few instances, but generally speaking, it doesn't work maybe 4% of the time. All right? What's another one? Per call. Oh, there it is. $10,000 a case. My firm's worth $10,000 a case. Pretty simple, isn't it? Well, let's talk about that a little bit. You got a 500-case firm in Omaha, Nebraska. Primarily a traditional business firm, okay? And then you got a 500-case firm in Los Angeles, California. Probably 490 of those cases are cremations. Are they both worth $10,000 a case? And so one's kind of up here and one's kind of down here. And the difference is, as this mix moves, so does the value. So, and I mean, even if there's two firms in Omaha and they're both doing 500, they can be largely really different than X amount of case. So forget it. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. What else? We'll get to that one next. Can we save that one? Here was an old one that was used for years. One times my revenues plus real estate. That's what it's worth. I mean, people would sell their places without consulting with anybody on that basis and left hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table. Literally. Literally. It just doesn't work. And let's go to the last one, because this one is closest to it than anything else, and that is multiple of cash flow. I mean, that's what you hear nowadays, right? And so let's see what that means. So you're sitting at home saying, well, hell, I can do this. All I got to do is take my financial statements, go to my accountant, we'll take out my expenses, all right? So there's my cash flow. And hell, I read in the Funeral Service Insider a week ago that the multiples are 6x cash flow or 5, so that's what I can expect to get. Huge mistake for a couple reasons, and we're going to get into that in just a minute. Let me tell you what the real things are. Now we're getting into some of our darkest and deepest secrets that I hate to throw out there, but I was told to go ahead and do it, all right? So I'm going to throw it out. Real estate is a big piece of any transaction that goes on in funerals or cemetery business. Why is it important? It sets the baseline of what your business is worth, what your total business is worth. What am I talking about? If you got a 200-case firm 10 years ago and now you're down to 20 cases, the chances are you're not going to get much for the business side of what you got. What you do have, your property to sell. And your property becomes the minimum price you should expect for your business, and hopefully you can sell some pre's and whatever else to a competitor. And with some of the divestiture work we've been focusing on, we've done a lot of that. We've done a lot of things that have gotten so bad, and we got there too late, all right? and all that was left was the property value. So the real estate is a big piece of the puzzle. Now let's talk about current cash flow. What I talked about before is close, all right? You do have to take your financial statements, you take your owner items out, but there's much more that can be done there within reason. That's what I can't tell you. We know what that is, because we know what financial companies will accept. We know what buyers are accepting nowadays, but it's got to be reasonable. Back in the old days, it didn't have to be real reasonable. It just had to have a nice story about it. So that's a piece of it. We've spent a lot of time in that. Another piece is the multiples. What is the current multiple in funeral service today? I knew you could hear a pin drop. I'm not going to tell you, because there really isn't one. But I can tell you what usually typically happens with your typical, really, consultant, if you use your local accountant to help you sell or whatever else, this is where they stop. And your accountant, which will your accountant or attorney will do, he'll call around all of us and try to find out what multiples are. That's and they become experts in our business by a five-minute call. And so now they're going to help you sell your firm. That isn't the answer. That isn't the answer. I'm going to show you why in just a minute. So property now. Property value is very important. Oh, I got to go back. Hold on, I got to go back. Jake taught me how to do this. Again, this is where everybody else pretty much stops. 6 times cash flow, 5 times cash flow, 20 times cash flow. This is where it stops and it all ends. But now I've introduced to you the value observation matrix, which I think, again, is the most significant thing we do, because here are the things that we now play in on this value. We don't let these things slip under the covers. And we start with property value, all right? And let's just take an obvious example. You got $1 million revenue firm here and $1 million revenue firm here. This one has a building worth about $400,000, and this one has a building worth about $1 million. In the 80s or 90s, they were pretty much bought for the same price because people were buying income streams, pretty much buying income streams. Is that fair? Come on. It's really not fair, okay? We're not saying you got to take that multiple up. This is not a cash flow. This is a multiple deal. But if you've got an asset-rich deal that you're well covered with the building that's part in property that's part of this transaction, you deserve a tick up on your multiple, all right? And that's what we do in our observation matrix. Conversely, if you're the $200,000 property, that's an asset poor deal, and we'll tick the multiple down a little bit. Not necessarily significantly, but it will be adjusted somewhat. What about property condition? You've got the $2 million firm sitting here, okay? One of them is in total disarray, hasn't been upkept for years, and you got one that's brand new and just a gem. Should this guy get a little more money than this guy? Certainly, if nothing else, you're going to do a deduct at the time of the purchase for some of the repairs that need to be made. So it is significant, and it needs to be done. And I'm telling you, in the 80s or 90s, it really wasn't considered too much. You just did the deal. You had to have the deal. Today, it's got to be more precise. You can't afford to do that. Location. Is it an on-street? Are you a main street location, or are you an off-street location? This is more significant in large and secondary cities, all right, where people may not know you and they need to find you. I own a funeral home in Batesville, Indiana, and it's not all that significant. Okay, there's 4,000 people there. They all know where the two funeral homes are. None of them are necessarily great sites, but they'll find them. But in other markets, this is very significant, and a good location should get a tick on multiple. A poor location may get a negative tick on multiple. Path of progress. Path of progress is pretty simple. Is your area integrating or disintegrating? Or are you in an area that's just going completely downhill and all the growth is going out? Or are you in the outside area where all the growth is going to? Should this guy that's in the outside area where all the growth is headed get a tick on his multiple? I think so. And the one downtown, you know, it may be time to move out there. Maybe time to build a funeral home where the growth is and nobody's done it. But it may be a little negative when we bring the buyers in. This one's simple, ADA compliance. I mean, you either do it or you don't. I've only got, is that 14 minutes left? Oh, geez. If you're not in ADA compliance, get it fixed. It'll be a deduct from the purchase price. It's just something you need to do. Functionality, is your funeral home or cemetery, is it very functional? Is it easy to work in, or is there going to have to be some renovation done, maybe to really, for maybe some added volume or whatever else that needs to be fixed up? Functionality is something that's a minor tick, but it can be a tick. Pre-need backlog. Ooh. We could do a day on this, all right? In the old days, pre-needs weren't given much weight. They really weren't. Our answer would be, well, yeah, I know you got a lot of pre-needs, and we appreciate it, but that's what your business, that has gotten your business to where it is today, and that's what we're paying for. I mean, that was the story. But now let's talk about today. And you've got a great firm with a great pre-need backlog that's well-funded at levels at or above current average sales. The inflation factors are great versus the firm that has an estate where you can take money out at the beginning. You're underfunded on it now. What you got invested in is not doing well. You know, I see a couple ticks over here. It's significant. Over here, you might be a problem. So pre-need, you got to be a little careful. And the dearth of pre-need in the face of competition can be a problem. You know, if you've got three competitors out there that are all selling pre-need and you have no pre-need going, and chances are the future is not real bright down the road. And these people are the buyers buying down the road. Market share. If your market share is going up, should that be a plus for you? Sure. If your market share is going down, that might be a negative. Your demographics are so many towns, some of the prime towns we got into. It was interesting. The secondary cities in the United States that were losing major corporations, this, that, or whatever. And people were just leaving. And the mix of people were changing. And it was pretty catastrophic to some of our deals. We didn't recognize it at the time, but we do now. And that's something we can help people from getting involved in. Case count. If your case count's going up, that's definitely a good thing. If your case count's going down, that can be a problem. All right? And that's the most difficult firm to sell, is where you got declining issues with it. Because people are always going to want to know where the leveling off point is. So it's definitely a deduct for multiple. Mix. You might have 200 calls a year, both firms, but one of them may be the cremation rate may be growing significantly, while the other one is being pretty stable. I mean, that's an issue when it comes to buying, and buyers will look at that, and it's something that is a deduct or an add. Top of the mind aspect. Top of the mind, bless you. Top of the mind is simple. You walk into a town, and you just say, funeral home. And if they say, Strickland's, you know, that's a top-of-the-mind thing. That means that funeral home is something that's important to that community. It's well-known, and there should probably be a little bump versus a funeral home that's not very well-known, even though it's been around for years. OSHA standards, if you don't have your OSHA standards met, get them met because it's very, very important. That's not an add to multiple or a deduct from cash flow. It's a deduct at the time of the deal because it has to be addressed. Personnel can be a great thing for you or it can be a bad thing for you. If you've got good people in your firm, you've set up the succession of your firm, buyers really like that. Buyers really like to have somebody on board that kind of knows what's been going on at this place. But if you don't and you really haven't invested in that, it could be a problem. It'll be a deduct. I got to move here a little bit because we're going life expectancy of business just kind of means with all the factors that are going around here is what's the prognosis for this firm down the road? Is it a growing concern or is it maybe a dying concern? And people are going to look at that and that deserves a tick. Utility of business, is the business primarily traditional, whatever, or is it primarily a cremation house? Makes a big difference in the multiple approach. Furniture, fixtures, equipment, no $2 million firms. One's just remodeled, got great furniture, great carpet, you name it, it's all taken care of, and you got the one that hasn't done a thing in 10 years. Should there be a difference in what you pay? Absolutely. Autos, same thing. I'm going to breeze on, I think. Union impacts. Sorry, I went a little fast. But, you know, union, you don't deal with it too often, but when you come face-to-face with it, it's an issue, especially because buyers will be very concerned over whether that union will infiltrate their business if they're not union now. Not necessarily a total negative, but can be a negative. Combo restrictions, you got some states you can't build combos. That's a big plus when you're selling a funeral home, okay? But if you got a funeral home, a great funeral home in a town, and maybe you have one competitor, and there's three cemeteries sitting there, one of them is pretty significant, as far as number of terminuses does, that's definitely a threat for a buyer coming in and buying you. And why? Because when you join a firm, it isn't the same. It just isn't the same. The entrepreneurial spirit isn't what it once was. You're buying because you're tired. You mean you've worked a long time, you want to reap some of the benefits of what you've done. And if you don't have that as much personal attachment as you had in the past, and somebody builds a funeral home on a cemetery right down the street, that's a problem. And so it needs to be considered. Employment agreements can be great if you've got good employees, can be a disaster if you've got a marginal employee and this new firm is tied into it for a period of time. Covenants, if you've got an existing covenant with your firm, it could be a great thing. Maybe you bought somebody out a few years ago, now you're trying to sell. Covenants could be a benefit. If you do a deal, there's going to be a covenant as part of your deal. Our job to make sure that it's not really significant dollars. There has to be a covenant. People are not going to want you to go out and compete against them. But some of those covenant payments got out of control at some point in time. Really did. And you can't afford to have that happen. And the scope of it's got to be reasonable from a legal standpoint. First rights of refusal, if you have them, get rid of them. What do first rights of refusal do? And there are people out there that give these out to people. And the problem is it minimizes your willing and able buyers coming in. Once they know you got a first right of refusal with somebody, they just kind of walk away. You know, they don't want to get involved in this because they just assume you're going to go ahead, find out what the top price is, and sell to the guy that's got the first right. So if you do have one, get rid of them. Here's one of the franchise value. And probably a classic example is right here in Las Vegas, Nevada, with Palm Mortuaries and Cemeteries. Great operation, good friend of mine, and just dominant in this market. Well, if somebody can come in, especially a public firm, and say, gee, Kenny, we've got to do a deal here, are they going to pay just a standard multiple for that? No way. No way you can let that happen. Because it is truly a franchise. There's several franchises, well, a lot of franchises throughout the United States. And there's some franchise on local levels. But if you truly have a franchise and you are dominant in a market and somebody can come in and acquire a dominant position, that's the most significant ticks on the multiple scale. Competition, if you got a new competitor coming to town, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's a bad thing. I mean, and usually that's when we get involved. The competitor starts opening up, and we get the call, hey, I want to sell my business. And the problem is that makes it very tough to sell the business. I mean, buyers are beware of that. The unearned increment. And we have a situation of this right now to where we have a client that's in a good market. We've had a competitive situation take place, so there's been a little drop in case count. But it's also in an area that is just growing, and the growth is significant to what's going to happen in the future. So even though there's some bad news now, there's some unearned increment with that because 5 to 10 years down the road, this firm's going to be a great firm. It really is. And in the past, that wouldn't even be considered. Today, that's got to be considered. If there's living quarters in an institution, you got apartments upstairs, that's worth something. Really is worth something. Nothing else, you can rent it out, add it into your EBITDA. Water rights, what does that mean to funeral homes? Nothing. What does it mean to a cemetery, especially in the western part of the United States? Extremely significant. You know, those water rights, don't buy a cemetery, don't get the water rights. I mean, it could be a big issue. Non-critical SS property, this is the one that I always get. A lot of firms that don't use someone to help them will end up selling the funeral home, the parking lot, the house we bought down the street, the two lots across the street, and that's ridiculous. The buyer really doesn't want them, but boy, he'll take them if you don't catch it. And it happens all the time. It happens all the time. Well, all you need to sell is the critical property to your business. And there's a rule of thumb in the cemetery business about how much, if you're going to sell your cemetery, you got a 200-acre cemetery, you develop 20 of it, there's a number of acreage that needs to be left with that cemetery, but you can sell some of the excess off. But you're right. Environmental issues, if you've got a gas tank, this is old news, but it's still out there today. Banks will not, nobody will lend you money without knowing they got a clean piece of property. Terms, I'll give you one term story, and then we'll pretty much end this presentation. Terms are really interesting, especially one of the most significant deals I've ever done in my life. A gentleman had a price in mind, a dollar that he wanted for his business. And we negotiated with him for about a week, and we couldn't get to the number. We were going to walk away. And finally we said, if you gave us terms, we might be able to get to your number. And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, if you'll take payments over 30 years of 4% and we just put a minimal down payment in, you know, we can get your number. And he said, well, that works for me. Well, we did the deal. And it was good for us. He got his number. He did okay. But present value of those dollars was probably back to where we wanted to pay him in the first place. But terms, if you want to extend terms, your price should go up a little bit if you give good terms to a buyer. Legal issues, we've got 30 slides I haven't put in here. I thought I could get through this in 50 minutes, but I can't. But there's legal issues. You structure your company. Are you a C-Corp, an S-Corp, or are you an LLC? It's not, remember one thing, it's not what you sell for, it's what you keep. And you got to get your house in order, if it's not, to make sure the tax issues are handled prior to selling. Because buyers typically aren't buying corporations nowadays. They're buying assets because they don't want any of the past problems. And it becomes significant. Third-party agreements, I can't go through it, I'm running out of time. Debt assumption, something like terms. You got a crematory, you know, that's good news. If it's all beat up and you got to be replaced or rebricked, that could be a deduct. Prep room, same thing. All right. And it was always interesting to me, the time my house looked the best is when I was about ready to sell. You know, you paint the house, you patch the stuff, you clean things up, and that's what you need to do here, okay? You really do. And don't do it. Most of you do a good job of it now. But get your house in order. And one thing that we can provide for you, if we go through all the matrix issues with you when we do evaluation, all those of you, you kind of look, oh, yeah, here, that's a problem for me. Oh, yeah, here, I need to fix that up. Because every dollar you invest now, you'll get more than that dollar back at the time you sell. So again, it's investing in your future. So the end. All I'm saying, all this talk was about, and I gave a lot of information that most people don't give out, honestly. But all we're saying is when you're buying and selling a business, a funeral home or a cemetery, any business, it can't be a game of chance. It's got to be something that you get a group that deals with it every day. And what do I mean every day? In the last 18 months, we have probably handled over 180 transactions in funeral services and cemetery business. That's pretty significant. And you thought no deals were being done? We've done about that many in the last 18 months. That's got to be 10 times more than anybody's even close to us. And I'm not bragging about how many deals we're doing. What I am saying to you is we know what's going on currently. Let there be no doubt about it. We know what the multiples are. So back to W.C. Fields. Buying and selling funeral homes, you can't afford to take a chance. You can't afford to take a chance. Buying one can be a catastrophic thing if you buy it at the wrong price. And when you work with Johnson Consulting, you'll never take a chance. Not the way we do it. Okay? Thank you very much. I enjoyed your attention. I hope you had a good time.